Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. What does it mean to be an American? And how has that identity changed over the course of our country's history? That's what we'll be looking at tomorrow on the program. Amid this fierce nationwide debate over immigration, we'll talk about who we let into the country, how that has changed over the decades, how it's been fraught from the very beginning of our nation. My guests, presidential historian Tim Walch and political scientist Rene Rocha, tomorrow on the program. What it means to be an American and how that has changed. My next guest is the current president of the University of Northern Iowa, Mark Nook. He's just passed 1 year in the anniversary of his being in that office. President Nook is in our Cedar Falls studio. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Ben. It's great to be with you again.
And if you'd like to join us, listeners, with a question for President Nook, feel free. Our email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org, or join us by phone, toll-free, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Well, costs going up for all students at the three universities, including the University of Northern Iowa. President Nook, last week the Board of Regents unanimously approved those tuition increases. A lot of numbers here. We'll just boil it down to the fact that at UNI, 2.8% rise in tuition, 3.8% at the U of I and ISU. A Board of Regents member called it the worst state government attack on our three public universities I can ever remember. How accurate do you believe that is?
Well, I haven't followed the Iowa political process long enough to know what sort of the history and things like that have been over the years. It has been rough, I know, in the legislature to have the dollars that they need to be able to meet the budget, especially with the changes in health care costs and infrastructure, K-12 education. It's just a very difficult time for many state governments across the country. And oftentimes higher education is looked at because we do have what people see as another revenue source, but that means really putting that tax on the back of our students that are coming here. And it will raise some tuition. You and I came out pretty good in that we got a $2 million from the legislature to go into next year, and that allowed us to keep our tuition down a little bit more, and we're looking at using as much of that, using the $2 million for financial aid to help keep the cost down for Iowa students. So right now we're looking, feeling pretty good about where we are with budgets and finances and things of that sort.
Mm-hmm. UNI was also exempted from this mid-year cut in the budget, wasn't it?
Yeah.
ISU and the UI have coped with a $40 million cut fairly late in the fiscal year by delaying maintenance, eliminating some scholarship programs, imposing a construction moratorium, in addition to raising tuition. What has happened on your campus? Have you been able to avoid those kinds of measures because you were left out of that late year cut?
For the most part, yes. We went through the same rescission a year ago, just as I was getting here. So we had to do some of that last year to get through that rescission and then a cut in our budget. At least this year with rescission, it was followed by some new funds. Didn't completely cover the gap for Iowa and Iowa State, but did get some there. We did and have had to look at those sorts of things, what we can do with maintenance, defer some, what we can. But in the end, those things stack up, and we'll have to do a building renovation at some point to take care of those if they get too far down the road. You like to look at those things before you lay off staff and things because you want to keep your quality high. It's really all about making sure we can offer a really high-quality education to our students. They deserve it. And so you focus on that and making sure that you've got the faculty and the staff that you need to deliver that education. And then you've got the facilities and equipment as well.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think UNI was exempted from this latest mid-year cut, entirely the burden of ISU and the U of I? What was the argumentation that evidently sold to the legislators?
Well, one of the things that people are really kind of just starting to realize over the last couple of years is that the three universities have very different missions, and UNI's is really pretty unique, and our student population is a lot different in that 90% of our students come from the state of Iowa, and about 85% of those kids that come from Iowa that graduate from UNI stay in the state of Iowa, and so we very much are educating Iowans for Iowa. And kind of an acknowledgement that, you know, when you cut back on the state appropriation equally in terms of the percentage of state appropriation we get, that's actually a bigger cut to UNI because so much of our budget is dependent on Iowa students. And I think that sort of messaging, that understanding that our mission is different, we've got a lot more invested right in the education, delivering that education, less on the research side, kind of hit with the legislature. It also hit with the regents. And we're trying to get our tuition pulled down relative to Iowa and Iowa State as well, and yet still protect that quality. And I think all of those together, you know, what we've done to help students lower their student debt through Live Like a Student, what we're trying to do to keep our costs down, and that we're a different kind of an institution and we're much more dependent on the Iowa student, mm-hmm. and consequently the money from the state legislature to help support that Iowa student. Those three together kind of made the difference for us.
When you reference that 90% of your students are coming from Iowa, is that the sweet spot? Is that the most desirable spot in terms of percentage there? Or aren't you wanting to change your model to recruit more out-of-state students?
We do want to increase the percentage but not lose any of the Iowa students. So what we're looking at doing is growing our enrollment, and we'll grow it with some Iowa students and with some non-resident students, but we'll grow the non-resident population a little bit faster. I've made a promise to the board and to the people of Iowa that what we're going to do is make sure that we continue to admit, accept, and enroll the same percentage of kids coming out of Iowa high schools as we always have, and if anything, tick that up a little bit. But then look to the out-of-state students for a couple of reasons. Most people think it's all about budget, and budget is certainly a piece of it because they pay their full cost of education. It helps the state out. But the more important issue to me is this state needs them. We know that 50% of the students that come to us from out-of-state, when they graduate, end up taking a job in Iowa. And right now, we've got more job openings than we have unemployed people. And that's a recipe for disaster long-term. And anything we can do to help bring workers, especially highly educated workers, into the state, we should be doing. And UNI is a great way to do that because we can, as we bring these students in, over 50% of them end up staying in the state. So it really is about driving Iowa's economy as much as it is balancing our budget, but it does help with that, with balancing the budget as well.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about enrollment and recruitment. Are you, and I think you are, facing an increasingly competitive field for these Iowa high school graduates? It's a shrinking field of high school graduates, and we've got, at the same time, do we not, private colleges in the state, from outside the state, being more aggressive with their financial packages. Is that not true?
It's absolutely true. The statistics on the number of students coming out of Iowa high schools, right now it's going to start to tick up slowly over the next approximately 6 to 8 years, but it's pretty slow. So we don't see a lot of growth in that. And everybody's looking for students. We're down from the all-time high back in the late 90s, early 2000s, and still in that little bit of a trough. So everybody's anxious, looking for students. The market has certainly tightened up with the publics and the privates. We're all looking for those students. So it is a competitive marketplace, and we've got to make sure we've got our marketing right. We've got to make sure we're paying attention to quality and that we're offering the high-quality education that we say we are, and that our students that graduate are going out and getting great jobs and doing great things that other people know about.
If you just joined us, the president of the University of Northern Iowa is my guest this half hour, Mark Nook. We hear how public universities are losing some top faculty to other universities in the country because of the budget cuts and because the universities cannot provide competitive salaries. Is that at all a problem at the University of Northern Iowa?
You know, I can't point to top faculty that we've lost directly to salaries per se. Salary is something that we always pay close attention to, because if you're going to recruit the kind of faculty that the people of Iowa want so that they get a high-quality education here. You've got to be able to offer a competitive salary and benefits package. So we're always trying to keep an eye on, you know, what's our peer median like? Where are our markets? Who else is going to be recruiting these young faculty members? And is our salary, our entire compensation package, competitive? So far, we've been able to be competitive enough that we've been able to get good hires. But we have had some people that choose other institutions over us, partly on salary package. So we're always mm-hmm. looking at ways that we can be competitive in what we have for a compensation package for faculty and staff.
I believe, President Nook, unlike ISU and the UI, you have collective bargaining for your faculty there, right?
That's correct.
So is it your experience, and you've been in office a short time, is collective bargaining good for Iowans, for the faculty, better able to keep salaries competitive?
Well, you know, I have to be really careful right now because this fall the faculty union will be, United Faculty will be voting on whether or not they recertify the union. And as a member of management, you know, it's not my place to push for or against that. And I can't get into that debate. From my perspective, however the faculty choose to organize is up to them. And then we will work with whatever that organization is. And if it's United Faculty, we'll continue to work with them in the collaborative way that we have. And if they decide that isn't the case, then we'll figure out with the faculty how we go ahead and continue to create the benefits and the salaries and the working conditions that keep the university strong.
Mm-hmm. You assumed the duties of president of the University of Northern Iowa last February 1st, received a 3-year contract, an annual salary of $357,000, and you were just awarded a 2-year deferred compensation plan. You'll get an additional $75,000 each year. I wonder, as you look at your colleagues around the nation, what do you think of these salaries of administrative salaries? Are you satisfied that Iowa is paying its chief executives enough to be competitive?
You know, I think the salary that we're offering, especially at UNI, I know that it is competitive with peer institutions. You know, we get calls every once in a while about what we're offering. I think we're in the ballpark. We're okay. There are people in that peer group that are paid higher than what I am paid, and there are institutions that are paying less than that. So we're about where we ought to be. I haven't sat down and done a real close peer analysis for Iowa and Iowa State. It doesn't look like it's horribly out of line with what's set up, either way too high or way too low, which is you know, where I'd kind of like to see things in any state, especially for executive compensation. I'd be uneasy if it was way out of line too high. And I think the people of the state ought to worry if it's way out of line too low, because you'll have trouble attracting good talent.
Mm-hmm. With a challenging fiscal situation, would you support perhaps bypassing some of your salary increase this year as a gesture to the challenge of the moment?
You know, that hasn't been brought up. The salary that was just put into place was the salary that was talked about during the interview process. So it was sort of the promised salary as we were setting this up. It's also the compensation that my predecessor was receiving. So it is part of that package. And, you know, my wife and I do donate to the university, and we're setting some things up that are in line with some of the things that have happened as well.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the growth of student debt. With these increasing costs, we have a growth of student debt. How are you keeping track of that? And I understand you have a financial literacy strategy to reduce student debt there at the UNI.
Yeah, UNI is actually a national leader, a national best practice. The Live Like a Student program has actually dropped student debt. We're one of the few campuses in the nation where our student debt has dropped from 2008 and 9. We were up over $25,700 for average student debt of those students who graduated with debt. And at that time, we were right on the national average. The national average has moved up over $32,000. And at the same time, we have moved our student debt down under $23,000. In fact, it's sitting right at $22,000. So we're about $10,000 below the national average and $3,000 below where we were, $3,500 below where we were just less than a decade ago. This program is not only financial literacy, where we help students understand how to put a budget together, their expenses, their revenues, but also does private loan counseling for anybody that qualifies for a private loan. They, before we'll sign off on that, they have to sit down with one of our loan counselors, go through their budget, understand exactly how much they would need to close a gap between their revenue and expenses, and then determine what the size of that loan would be to just cover that. And we've helped most of our students lower their the loan that they actually take out by pretty close to $1,000 a year. And so we are seeing this pretty dynamic drop and things around student debt. And as I said, it's become a national model, best practice. We were asked to write a blog post for the American Council on Education about what we've done and the results that we've had, because we've also dropped the percentage of students who have debt when they leave from 80% down to 70%, which is another remarkable.
President Nook, we have just enough time to get to a caller. Peter is with us from Iowa City. You have to be quick, please. Peter, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks. It's very refreshing to hear that the dean is going to service Iowa residents first, because that's a big problem here in Iowa City. Dean of Iowa Law was just hired at $350,000. It's a pretty hefty compensation package, and I just heard that the UNI dean here is also at $350,000. I just want to ask a couple things. You know, does anybody need that kind of money? Basically breaks down to $36,000 a month to feel like they can do a good job in a small community such as Cedar Falls.
Yeah, you know, when you look at the compensation, I think one of the big questions is, what does it take to get good leaders in these senior positions, and how does that stack up relative to getting good faculty members? And the only way to get a good handle on that is what is the market out there for people who are presidents at institutions like this? And as I said before, this salary is competitive. It's not overpriced. It's not underpriced. It's about what you'd expect for a position of this type at an institution of our type and size.
Let me tap into a couple of national debates here that I'm touching some campuses, perhaps the campus of UNI as well. How are the more aggressive immigration policies of the Trump administration impacting student life at UNI?
You know, one of the things that is a little bit more difficult is some of our international students are a little nervous. We're also having some trouble with getting them to apply in the first place. So it is impacting some of the international students that come to our campus and help us, you know, create a better cultural diversity, help our students understand what it is like to live and learn and work in a diverse work environment. And that's really what many of our employers are looking for. We've been told time and time again that they really need to have students coming out that know how to work in culturally diverse situations, because the world really is, you know, the business world is global now. It's not local anymore. And so they're looking for people with those kinds of credentials and those sorts of abilities and skills.
Mm-hmm. Specifically to students who may be DACA or recipients, mm-hmm. speak to that. These are kids grown mm-hmm. up here in the U.S., were brought here perhaps as young kids and have grown up here, really only known this country. Mm-hmm. You have students at UNI who are DACA students.
We do. We don't know how many it is, because it's not a question that shows up in the database anywhere. But we do know we have at least a handful or so, and they have been very, very nervous about how things have been going on. We've been working with them to make sure that they have as much information at their hands as possible about how things are going and how to continue to handle their status and provide them with good advice and get them to the resources they need.
So you do hear from these students?
We do have people that some of them we hear from, and some of them I'm pretty sure we don't hear from. But we, you know, I'm not having them come into the office. They're talking with various people around the campus about financial aid they can't get to in the same way. You know, they don't qualify for Perkins loans and things of that sort. So there are just some resources around how they stay in the country and how they track what's going on in the federal government that we help them with.
Do you think you would, without this change in the federal government's policy, policing of immigration, do you think that has eliminated some UNI students? Do you know of any students, DACA students, who are not attending who would have otherwise?
I don't know of any specific students, no.
Mm-hmm. free speech on campus has been an issue nationwide. Have you had to deal with free speech controversies, hate speech on campus, policies there?
We've been in pretty good shape for the most part with that. We haven't had any major clashes around free speech or hate speech on the campus. We've been pretty open and tried to get people talking to each other early on and keep the conversations going, and I think that's helped a lot. We've had speakers on both the political right and political left on campus, which is I think also helpful, and we try to do it in a respectful manner, but it is one of those things that is very difficult to stay on top of as well. And so we're continually working with both student groups, faculty and staff groups, so that we can keep in that place where we have respectful conversations and respect each other's viewpoints. But it is a difficult time right now.
Okay, and finally, Mark Nook, president of the University of Northern Iowa. What's the highlight of your summer that's not related to your work?
The highlight of the summer is actually related to work. We're going to China with the College of Business. They're going to be handing out the first diplomas to the MBA students that are graduating. So we'll be over there to hand those out, and then an alumni event and things. But away from that, spending time with my grandchildren and my children. Got a couple of first birthdays coming up for two little boys here in August. So we'll be up celebrating with them. And then we'll spend a little time in Yellowstone this just after we go to the University of Montana game. We'll spend 3 days in Yellowstone, enjoying the nature and the beauty that is Yellowstone.
Mark Nook, president of the University of Northern Iowa, thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you very much, Ben.
Mark Nook, president of the University of Northern Iowa. Tomorrow on this program, what does it mean to be an American? And how has the American identity changed over the course of our country's history? Yes, this ties in with our fiery immigration debate. Discuss the idea of who is an American, who we let into this country, and how that has been fraught from the very beginnings of our nation. My guests, presidential historian Tim Walsh, also political scientist Rene Rocha. That's tomorrow on the program. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, and our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Help today in Cedar Falls from Chris Fenton. Help as well from Lucy McGeehee and Shirley Wong. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.